Okay, thank you very much. I want to talk here about some energetic aspects of the large-scale solar dynamo. This morning Nick talked already about problems with the... It's on, yes? This morning Nick talked already about some problems with the omega effect, and I'm following a little bit in his footsteps here, but I try to look at this problem more on the global scale of the dynamo. So the question is basically, how much power do we need to drive the large-scale solar dynamo? And these are more order of magnitude estimates, so it's really more a question, is it just a trivial problem we don't have to worry about, or are there actually some really severe energetic constraints on the problem? And in the end, I will also talk about some potential implications for stellar dynamos, basically solar-like stars at different rotation rates. Now, the difficulty in addressing this problem is that we don't really have a large-scale dynamo model from first principles, so one has to do here something which uses some order of magnitude estimates and some non-kinematic mean field models. When we talk about the saturation of a dynamo, there are various mechanisms that can saturate a dynamo. For the solar dynamo, I think pretty much everybody agrees it's an alpha-omega dynamo, which means the alpha effect changes the topology of a field in a way that enables the dynamo action, whereas the omega effect, the shear by a large-scale flow, is the primary energy input mechanism. A dynamo of this type can saturate by microscopic feedback, which is quenching of turbulent induction effects, and Axel talked about that yesterday. I don't want to discuss anything of this here. And the other way a dynamo of this type can saturate is through feedback on the macroscopic flows which induce the field here, the differential rotation and the meridional flow. So this feedback through the Lorentz force has two components. One is here basically the mean fields, and this is the average of the fluctuating fields. In a mean field model, one only has really access to this first term, and I will neglect the second term in the following discussion. As Sasha briefly mentioned this morning, this term also tends, on average, to decrease differential rotation, so I might underestimate actually the feedback on the mean flows here. So it might be a more optimistic view, but as we see later, it's still pretty pessimistic. So in order to address this in a model which basically conserves energy, what I do is I solve the full axisymmetric MHD equations in the mean field approach. So I solve also equations for differential rotation, meridional flow, and an energy equation. But this, of course, requires that I have additional parameterizations of transport terms, and the most important ones here are the transport angular momentum, and which maintain the differential rotation and meridional flow. And as Nick taught us already this morning, it really comes down to a question, how are these shear flows maintained when you want to answer the question, how can they actually build magnetic fields? And I couple, so the parameterization basically decomposes here the Reynolds stresses into a non-diffuse, which is called the lambda effect, following the work of Kichatinov and Rüdiger, and the diffusive part. And I couple this system with a flux transport dynamo model. Sasha very briefly discussed this already this morning. It's a dynamo model which basically builds strong magnetic field at the base of the convection zone through the shear of differential rotation. Flux tubes become unstable during the rise. They are twisted by the Coriolis force, which formally is an alpha effect. This process regenerates the large-scale colloidal field, which then gets transported by the meridional flow back to the base of the convection zone and sheared up again. So in order to start this investigation, I have to start with some reference state differential rotation meridional flow model, and since I want to address the energy problem for the solar dynamo, I start with a model where the freedoms I have in the parameterization of the turbulent angular momentum transport process is chosen in a way that the model looks solar-like. This is the differential rotation, which shows these inclination of roughly 25 degrees of isocontours with respect to the axis of rotation as observed. This is the stream function of the meridional flow, and this deviation from the Proudman-Taylor state is due to entropy perturbation which arises in this model self-consistently through the coupling to the tachocline where there is a thermal wind balance, which imposes, as also Sasha mentioned already this morning, also entropy perturbation in the convection zone. If I wouldn't have this effect, the differential rotation with exactly the same parameterization of thermal angular momentum transport would be in the Portman-Taylor state here. Then I couple this model with the flux transport mean field dynamo, and I get time solutions of differential rotation meridional flow. These are a few snapshots of the field evolution. The color shows the toroidal field components and contour lines of the colloidal field. This is the radial surface field, and the contours here indicate the butterfly diagram, which is here the toroidal field at the base of the convection zone. This panel shows the variation of the meridional flow at the base of the convection zone. The mean flow is here of the order of 1-2 meters per second, and there are some variations on top of it of the order of 0.5 meter per second, but the magnetic field is still advected. And these are the torsion oscillations, the variations of the differential rotation. Right before the solar activity starts, there's normally a slower rotation in higher latitudes. And then when the butterfly diagram propagates equatorward, meaning the magnetic field is advected equatorward, then the rotation rate catches up again in higher latitudes. Basically, most of the work against the shear is done before the magnetic field actually appears here, and then the differential rotation recovers, and that's the reason why you get the speed up afterwards. So this movie just shows how this varies in time. Here again, the field evolution. These are the torsion oscillations, so the mean differential rotation is subtracted here. This shows this forward propagating branch, and the fact that these flows are aligned with the axis of rotation as a consequence of the Portman-Taylor theorem. And these are the variations of the meridional flow. So how is energy distributed in this model? There are four energy reservoirs. We have basically the stratification reservoir of internal and gravitational energy, differential rotation, meridional flow, and magnetic energy. The one thing which drives the entire system is the non-diffusive turbulent angular momentum transport, which I just count here as 100%, which drives differential rotation. Roughly half of this energy is again lost to internal energy through turbulent dissipation. Around something of the order of 40% drives meridional flow through the Coriolis force, and most of this energy also goes back to internal energy through work against the buoyancy force, which is due to the fact that they have this latitudinal entropy variations in the convection zone in order to get away from the Portman-Taylor state. And then the dynamo extracts energy from differential rotation through the omega effect and some energy also from the meridional flow, which roughly adds up to something, which is 10% of the energy which is required to drive the differential rotation in the system. And what I see in this model is that I get saturation through the feedback on differential rotation, then I have a field strength of the order of 10 to 15 kilogauss at the base of the convection zone. And most of the saturation takes place through a reduction of the mean differential rotation, which went down from roughly 35% to 25%. This is just the hydrodynamic reference solution I started from. Actually, the cyclic variation we see as torsion oscillations is a much smaller perturbation, which is of the order of 1%, which is a rather minor side effect, and it's not directly related to this primary saturation, which comes from the reduction of the mean. The amount of magnetic flux which is produced at the base of the convection zone is of the order of 10 to the 24 Maxwell. The feedback on the meridional flows is not very significant for this field strength. And overall, the amount of energy you need to run this dynamo is 0.1% of the solar luminosity, which at first sight doesn't seem to be too much. It's around 10% of the flux which is required to maintain differential rotation. Now, this number is very close to observed irradiance variation, but that could be a coincidence in this model. But overall, if one actually compares these numbers to the amount of flux which appears at the solar surface during the cycle, which is of the order of 10 to the 24 to 10 to the 25 Maxwell, it seems that the solar dynamo is already quite strongly limited by the amount of energy which is available through differential rotation. But these are very rough estimates, so there might be not really a problem. The numbers roughly match up, but there's not much room to increase the energy requirements without running into trouble here. So how robust are these estimates? I can play around with the amplitude of the alpha effect, I assume, in this dynamo, and these results are actually not very sensitive to it, because it really comes down to a balance between how strong is differential rotation driven and how quickly you try to extract this energy. To increase the alpha effect, these energy conversion rates stays the same, the dynamos become more non-cyclic but irregular, and the amount of differential rotation decreases substantially to something like 10% or less. And this estimate is also very independent from the details of the dynamo mechanism, as long as it is the alpha-omega dynamo, where differential rotation is the primary energy input mechanism. The one thing it's very sensitive to is the parametrization of Reynolds stresses. By just cranking up the turbulent diffusivity, I assume here, by a factor of 10, I could increase the energy input into the system by a factor of 10. Now, this value roughly corresponds, assuming that these Reynolds stresses are something like 1 to 5% of the RMS velocity squared, which is actually very reasonable if you look in 3D simulations. This corresponds to a replenishment time scale for the energy in the differential rotation of roughly 10 years, which is seen in 3D simulations. And also, the other thing which scales up with the turbulent viscosity is the speed of the Mariani flow. If I would crank this up by a factor of 10, Mariani flows would just scale up by a factor of 10, and we have something like 100, 200 meters per second flow at the close to the surface of the sun, which is not really seen. So there are also some observational constraints how large this effect is. So I'm pretty much stuck with the amount of energy I estimated here. So is there a problem? Now, as long as we only look at the sun, it's most probably okay. But things become problematic if we look at other stars. Basically, solar-like stars, they have the same convection zone depth, they have the same luminosity, but they just rotate at a different rate. And there's this very clear indication of the activity-rotation relationship. What it measures is the X-ray luminosity and calcium fluxes, which are attributed to a magnetic field at the surface of the star. And this shows a very solid relation. It increases with decreasing rotation period, and it saturates when the star rotates roughly at a few days, has a rotation period of a few days. And what people normally estimate from this is that the magnetic flux, which has to be present at the surface of the star, scales up with roughly omega squared. Different estimates, they have some spread, but the middle is roughly omega squared. And the typical interpretation one sees here is the dynamo activity increases with rotation, which seems reasonable at first sight, but then it comes down to the question, does it actually work energetically? No. In the case of the sun, as I told you, it seems to be already pretty constrained by rotation. So is there any increase which is possible if you go to faster rotation? So just to recall the result, the dyno roughly uses 10% of the power required to drive differential rotation, which is 0.1% of the luminosity. So we have here two relations. Dynamo is 10% of the rotation, and the rotation needs roughly 1% of the luminosity to be maintained. This is something like an efficiency of the dynamo, which might be a little bit different for different dynamo models, but the value of 10% is very reasonable. I wouldn't expect that this goes up to 1. It's very unlikely to happen. And this relation, I guess if one is very optimistic, it might at best scale up this omega. It's very unlikely to end up in a regime where the Reynolds stresses convert the entire luminosity into a differential rotation. And this is mainly due to the fact that Reynolds stresses have the tendency to saturate once you're in the regime of fast rotation, where the Coriolis number is larger than 1. at the base of the convection zone, we have already a value of around 5. Now, the activity rotation should require something flux goes up with omega squared. So if you assume the flux estimate for the sun, something 10 to the 24, 10 to the 25, Maxwell is right. So if you want to fit now 10 to the 26 or 10 to the 27 Maxwell inside the star, you also have to assume that the magnetic field strength goes up just because of geometric reasons. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to fit this flux into a star. So the power required by this dynamo should scale up even steeper. And there you have a pretty strong mismatch with, I guess, the most optimistic estimate you can make here. So what are the possible solutions for this problem? Of course, we could have made something completely wrong here, overestimating the energy required by the solar dynamo. But the three things which basically go into here is we have this flux constraint, which is observed. There is, of course, some question, how much flux do you need at the base of the convection zone to create sunspots? The one extreme is that you actually lose a lot of flux while flux tubes are rising through the convection zone, which is very reasonable to assume. So you might say you need even more flux at the base of the convection zone. The other extreme is that you have there a flux system of toroidal field with a very low flux. This just has a very low wave number instability, just creating a very short wave number sunspots which rise up and then it closes again. So you build several spots out of basically one toroidal flux ring. But I guess it's very difficult to assume to get significantly away from this number. And then you need something like 10 kilogauss just to be able to store this amount of flux somewhere at the base of the convection zone. Of course, the other constraint which goes in here is the assumption that you have to recreate this flux system every 11 years, and that is something Dave also talked about this morning. And if you have these numbers, you're pretty much doomed to get something which is of the order of 0.1% of the solar luminosity. Of course, it is possible that we have a different type of dynamo in faster rotators, and there are some indications from recent work Benjamin Brown did for fast rotating suns, which indicates that you can build a lot of flux even inside the convection zone. Whether this really solves this energy problem is really a question, whether you still need the omega effect to create this field, or where you basically first have to create differential rotation and then the field, or if you can just bypass this by having directly turbulent induction effects creating the field without first having to run through the differential rotation. Where you might be able to increase the efficiency of the entire chain. Another possibility is, of course, that this interpretation that faster rotating stars have more active dynamos is not right. The only thing where we have an indication for is that the flux at the surface increases. So is there another solution? Just as a reminder, if you take the flux, which actually appears at the surface of the sun, we make the very bold assumption that the sunspots just live much longer. You can actually cover a significant fraction of the solar surface entirely with spots. And this might be not too unreasonable to assume in fast rotators, the scales which are actually influenced by rotations, they really shrink down to the scale of active regions. And something like this would also give an alternative explanation for the fact that fast-rotating stars tend to have mixed polarities in high latitudes. The explanation for this, one very often reads in the literature, is the idea of having a higher flux eruption rate and a faster meridional flow. The idea is to basically move the active regions to the high latitudes before they can actually diffuse into each other. Alternative to do this is just having the same amount of flux and increasing the lifetime of active regions with the same meridional flow, even a weaker flow, as it might be more reasonable for fast rotators, you could get the same result. Okay, thank you.
Any questions? Getting back to the manner in which the X-ray luminosity is produced. Could you do it with small-scale fields that cover a lot of area? Has anyone really dealt with atmosphere models with reconnection in that to assess the manner in which you produce the X-ray flux. We tend to say, oh, well, it's big flaring events or big loops as we know it in the sun. But what do you do when you have a star that rotates three times faster?
Yeah. I cannot really give the answer. I'm not an expert in that field. I don't know if anybody else knows about the formation of X-ray.
Magma takes 10% of differential rotation energy, then we're supposed to see these, and I think from observations it's at least 100 times smaller.
I mean, the variation of differential rotation, that is, I mean, as I pointed out, the main effect is the reduction of the mean, and if you look at helioseismology, you don't see the reduction of the mean because the mean we measure is already the differential rotation reduced by the mean magnetic field which is around there. The variation on top of it is a much smaller effect, and in these models, it's 1% of the rotation rate. So since we cannot observe the sun in the total absence of a dynamo, we cannot really say what would be the pure hydrodynamic solution, how much is this reduced by the presence of magnetic fields. So.
I did work on that at a certain point with the Maunder minimum, and there are some indication that during the Maunder minimum, even though I know the 11-year cycle is still going on, there were some indication that the contrast of angular velocity is actually a bit steeper. So you can compare what's during the Maunder minimum and what is the current sun, and you do see a difference, at least observationally, from 0 to about 25 degree in latitude. So of course, during Maunder minimum, the observations are very sparse. But yeah, I agree with Matthias that what we find in the 3D models or observation seems to be a reduction, that the sun right now has a kind of differential rotation which is quenched with respect to what was in the Maunder minimum.
Well, perhaps I can use Chairman's right. Has anybody, or is there a way of estimating how much energy actually goes out in magnetic energy into the solar wind during each solar cycle? And would that be a meaningful thing to compare anything with?
I don't know. Actually, do you know anything about that?
So if you estimated the energy that would be dissipated through the differential rotation, what fraction is that of the luminosity?
You have roughly 1% which is converted through the lambda effect to differential rotation, roughly half
right,
of so this gets dissipated again.
That's based on a calculation, right?
Yeah,
not just an estimate.
Mean field, one of these lambda alpha mean field models.
Okay, well, thanks very much again. And,
Thank you.